and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Bonnie Kaplan, and we're going to talk about micronutrients for mental health. Before we get started, though, I want to mention a conference that's going to be held in New York, September 23rd, which is the Micronutrients for Mental Health Conference. If you have any interest in holistic health to treat addiction, to treat depression, or anything that has to do with your mental health, you may want to attend this conference. Also, I want to encourage you to look at the website of the Alliance for Addiction Solutions. Everybody that I know, anyway, has somebody that has some kind of addiction, whether it's the food or sex or drugs or gambling or shopping. There's the source for help for those people, holistic sources. So how are you, Dr. Kaplan?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to come on my show today. You're going to be at that conference in New York, right?
I am going to be at the conference. Shall I give the website for any of your listeners who want to take a look at it?
I would love for you to do that, and I'd love for you to give information about where people can find you. And I'd love for you to tell us about a little bit about your background and how you came to do what you're doing.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. And if I forget any of that, Eva, just interrupt and ask me a question. So I'll give the website before I forget it because I have it open in front of me. It's M as in mother, M as in mother, H, forum, F-O-R-U-M, .org. That stands for Micronutrients and Mental Health, mmhforum.org. So I myself am a research psychologist. I'm a full-time scientist. I do not do any form of clinical work, either here in my own town or long distance. But I have always had an abiding interest on the role of nutrition in relationship to brain development and brain function. I'm a professor in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Calgary, which is in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. That's in Western Canada, just north of Montana, as I explained to many of my American friends. So my research on nutrition in relationship to brain development and brain function has taken me down a number of different pathways. I'll just give you a little bit of an overview, but then I'm going to be focusing on treatment of mental health. That's what I'm most absorbed in right now, okay? But I've also been interested in the removal of chemicals from food and the very exciting research over the years showing that the so-called food additives, they're mostly food dyes that just permeate our children's food, affect not only clinical samples of children with ADHD, but according to the latest British research from the last 6 or 7 years, these food dyes actually affect behavior in all children. I'm sorry, in all samples of children. In any group of kids, you're going to have some who are more sensitive than others, right? I'm sure your listeners understand that. The point is that we used to think that this area of food colors, food dyes, food additives was relevant only for clinical referrals. And now there's just a growing amount of understanding and scientific data showing that it's relevant for public health. It's relevant for our children, for the developing brain. So that's one area that I have done some research in, but I'm not currently working on that. So I don't think I'll continue talking about that, Eva, unless you had any questions.
I'll let you say everything you have to say and rattle up questions when you get through.
Okay. When I pause for breath, that's
yeah.
Fine.
Because I'm interested in everything you have to say, and so is my audience. My audience, just so you know, are typically well-informed about what's going on in the alternative realms of nutrition and supplements and things. So they will appreciate what you have to say.
Okay. So a second area I'll just touch on briefly that also takes up a lot of my time, but I'm just going to mention it so I can get on to the mental illness issue. That is the area of intrauterine nutrition. We have the opportunity, because of a wonderful provincial grant that my colleagues and I were awarded, to look at whether, or how, I should say how, nutrition during gestation, during those 9 months of pregnancy, might be influencing a lot of different things, influencing maternal mood in the mother, influencing outcomes at birth, all the things related to birth weight, preterm birth, adverse outcomes of birth, and also related to how the brain is developed. And so we're going to be testing children for cognitive function and performance at the age of 3 onwards, and depending on funding, we're not sure how long our funding will go for. So this longitudinal work is very exciting, and it's called a longitudinal cohort study because we're tracking, so far we have about 1,800 pregnant women who we're tracking through pregnancy and then tracking their offspring as long as our money lasts. And that cohort study has a cute little acronym. It's called APRIN, which stands for Alberta Pregnancy Outcomes and Nutrition. And I'll give you another website for that, just in case any of your listeners are interested in it. It is being carried out only in Alberta, Canada, but because we can't do long-distance work on this. But if anyone's curious, we have a great website, and it's apronstudy.ca.
Wow, I cannot imagine how that won't have profound, you won't find profound implications.
Well, we think we will, because, you know, the latest research on nutrient intake, nutrient status, shows that it's not just a developing world issue, but over 50% of the population is not getting the most basic necessary levels of at least some of the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals. Mm-hmm. So even though in Calgary we're not studying third world nutrition, we're studying a very developed world, and also, to be honest, Eva, we all have this problem when we're doing research that people who are the poorest, the most stressed, the most distressed, they're not going to volunteer to be in a study, right? Their lives are too difficult. Mm-hmm. And so we always end up with a skewed sample of people who tend to be more educated, from higher socioeconomic status groups, et cetera. But, you know, even a lot of women in those groups there's a great diversity of nutrient intake, even in the developed groups like that.
I'm curious, where are you pulling your samples from? Are they coming from a doctor's office or volunteers or where?
Well, we actually are just advertising like crazy all over the city of Calgary. And it is going well. 1,800 in science is a very good sample size, but we had hoped to have several thousand by now. It's very hard. People are very busy, and we ask them to come in and let us poke them and take blood samples and DNA samples, and we ask them to fill in information about what they're eating and then bring in their babies after they're born and fill in more questionnaires. So we're very fortunate to have such a large sample.
Okay.
Already so.
The thing that made me ask that question, and this doesn't have anything to do with pregnancy, but it does have to do with treatment of mood disorders, is my teenage daughter, I think I told you this, got very sick and got suicidal, and we had to put her in a hospital. And I got into a very big argument with the director of this hospital one day out in the lobby about, because they were feeding all of them colored foods and sugar.
Oh, dear.
For all of their meals.
Dear.
And so nobody obviously gets well, you know? So that's just what made me ask that question.
Well, we
brought up the two together.
You know, when I give lectures on nutrition and mental function, I often show a slide that says, we are what we eat. How could it be otherwise?
Exactly.
I think there are so many people who just don't think about the fact that every time you put a bite of something in your mouth, you're feeding the cells in your body. That's why we have to eat. And, in fact, may I give you a statistic that illustrates this even better, Eva? And I know I'm speaking to a very well-informed audience, your listeners, but they might not have heard this before. And that is that about a liter, which is about a quart, of blood permeates, flows through our brain every single minute that we are awake. Did I say awake? I'm sorry. I meant to say alive. Every single minute that our hearts are beating, right? Our hearts pump blood. And so every minute that we're alive, about a quart of blood pulses through our brains. What is that blood doing? Well, it's bringing oxygen. That's very important. But the other thing it's doing is it's carrying nutrients. So every minute of every day that you're alive, you can ask yourself, what's in my brain's bathwater? And look back at what you've been eating that day, and you'll know. And sometimes it's not a pretty picture, is it?
No. Do you associate, you know, there's a new book out there by a Harvard doctor called Gut, the Second Brain.
Mm-hmm.
Is that important in what you're saying as well?
Absolutely. And I'm not going to talk too much about that, if you don't mind, Eva, because I'm not an expert in gastroenterology. But clearly, some of the most exciting work that's going on is showing that absorption of nutrients, which happens in the gut, in the GI system, is something that is very much neglected. So even if you're eating well, if your gut is not very healthy, and there are so many ways it can be unhealthy, those nutrients are not being absorbed. And if they're not being absorbed, they're not getting into the blood. And if they're not getting into the blood, that quart of blood that's pulsing through your brain in those next minutes, or, you know, however long it takes to be metabolized and so forth, it's going to be nutrient poor compared to what it should be. So I just think it's wonderful that everybody's looking at the health of the gut.
So if you could generally discuss the role of micronutrients in mood disorder as broadly as you feel comfortable doing it, that would be great.
Okay. Well, so I've kind of covered the two areas that have taken up a lot of and continue to take up a lot of my life. APRN is a major effort. But what I'm most passionately interested in doing is making mental illness go away. And I know that we can't do that because there are lots of reasons to be depressed or to be anxious. And there are family issues, there are psychosocial issues, there are war, there's famine, there's so many causes of disturbed mental health. But even if you remove all of those, I know that treatment with micronutrients can help some other people, and it can help some of the suffering go away. So how do I know it? Let's see. I think I would have time to do this. May I do a little historical walk through history?
Interview, Bonnie. Okay. Whatever you feel to best educate my listeners, I'm open.
All right. Well, this provides kind of an interesting context. Now, I'll bet every one of your listeners has often heard the quote about, you know, Hippocrates saying, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. But we found something here in Alberta a number of years ago that shows me that we scientists are often just reinventing the wheel. We're having to reprove things that were known in the past. And I don't mean Hippocrates here, but let me tell you about this. One of my research assistants was out in a rural part of Alberta visiting a great aunt. And on her great aunt's bookshelf, she found this set of volumes called The People's Home Library. And it was published in 1910. Now, we're not exactly a prairie province here. We're right pushed up right against the Rocky Mountains, but we're at the edge of the prairies, and there were a lot of homesteaders. And in 1910, they did not have doctors to go to. And one of those volumes guided families when they could not access a health care provider. So, you know, someone on the farm would get burned. It told you how to deal with minor burns. Or someone had tuberculosis. Or even someone had heart disease. I mean, all kinds of information in the 1910 People's Home Library. So this research assistant eagerly turned to the index, and she later brought me the volume to show me this, Eva, and looked up mental illness. How were people in 1910 told to treat mental disorders? And here's a direct quote. The number one cause of acquired insanity is imperfect nutrition. I swear I think I got goosebumps when I read that.
That's amazing.
They knew it back on the prayer in the homesteaders in 1910, 100 years ago. They knew that if someone was acting strangely, there might be other reasons too. There are certainly brain injuries and so forth can cause problems, but they knew, beef up this person's nutrition. And here's the other thing they knew, Eva. They knew not to give the person a single pill of, say, vitamin C. I don't know if they even had any pills in those days. They probably didn't, you know. They knew that we, our physiology requires a balance of nutrition. We have evolved to need everything in balance. And some people likely, and I base this on scientific data I won't bore you with, but some people likely need more micronutrients than other people.
I want to hear your scientific data. It won't bore me or my listeners. No, it won't.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll bet you've heard of Roger Williams, maybe. He coined the term biochemical individuality, and he wrote a book on it in approximately 1950. And he was an academic physiologist who studied laboratory animals, mostly rodents, rats, and mice. And this little book, which I've read, it's a wonderful little thing, shows the individuality of lab rats, which are bred to be identical. And you can extrapolate from all of his data to what we know about humans. And the one set of experiments that best illustrates the point I'm making is this. You can take a group of lab rats, as Roger Williams did, and feed them rat chow, which is probably better balanced in terms of nutrition than your diet or mine, Eva, or, well, maybe we're not good examples, but the average person in North America. And you can test their memory and their learning and their motor skills and just watch their general health, and most of them are pretty fine. And then you can take the rat chow, and you can cut it by, say, I don't remember his exact numbers, but say 10%, and most of them are still probably pretty okay. And then you can cut out another 10% of the nutrients, keeping the basic food so they're not starving, okay? But cut out the vitamins and minerals, another 10%. Some of them will start looking a little sickly. Some will start having trouble with the learning and memory tasks. And you can keep cutting it by 10% and 10% and 10%. You can go down to a very low level of micronutrients. And there are some of those lab animals that look fine. They are functioning fine. They are learning fine. They can run the mazes. They can do whatever. And there are some that are dead. That kind of individuality, I think, applies to humans. And I often give an example, Eva, of myself, because I think, you know, and I notice you've already referred to your family, and I think with your listeners it's important for us to talk about our personal experiences. I have been blessed with a very stable mood. I have many faults, many weaknesses. My mood is pretty calm. I think I could eat junk food for months, and I think I'd feel crummy, but I don't think I'd be depressed, or I don't think I'd have bipolar. I think I'd be all right. I think my mood is quite resilient. I've seen other people at the other end of the continuum who eat really, really healthy diet, and yet they do better in terms of their mood when they're given a broad spectrum formula. So this tells me that Roger Williams' data on biochemical individuality in lab animals is very relevant to humans also. And it fits with everything we know about the individuality of humans. Each one is different. So I was telling you that for a reason. May I go back and pick up that thread?
It's your show. Go ahead.
Okay, you keep saying that. I think it's your show, Eva, but okay. So I might not have a perfect train of thought here, but I was using it as an example to show that the people in their homesteads, they probably didn't have the ability to go to a store and buy B complex or calcium or vitamin C. But I doubt that it would have even crossed their minds, because I think that what they knew was that it was a matter of broad spectrum how you eat, and that we have to have a balanced diet. There's very good data on on the diet intake and mood, which I can come back to, but I'd like to say a little bit about how this has influenced my research. So one of the things that my colleagues and I did was we published an article in 2007 in a psychology journal called Psychological Bulletin, called Vitamins, Minerals, and Mood, where we looked at all the research on nutrition and mood, and we were amazed at how much there was, because I was always running into, especially psychiatrists, because they're the ones here who deal with mental health the most, who thought that vitamins and minerals were irrelevant for mental health. I don't know why anybody would ever think that, because our brains are a function of our vitamins and minerals, but that is what they're taught. Or to put it in another way, they're not taught about nutrition. So when we put that review article...
I have to say this. We both know why they're not taught about nutrition.
Yes, we both know that.
Big
we won't
pharma.
Go there. Yes, that's right. It's big pharma, without a doubt.
I have to say, we can look all day. I live in a deciduous rainforest where there's all kinds of plants to treat everything. And no matter how hard I look, I can't find any Wellbutrin or Effexor or Paxil.
No, but you will find some medications there, as you know.
Oh, I do.
Like aspirin. Yeah, okay.
But I haven't found those things yet.
You wouldn't. So, we've evolved. We haven't evolved to need Prozac. We've evolved to need vitamins and minerals, but we haven't evolved to need them one at a time. And it breaks my heart, because I'm a scientist, always applying for grant money, to look at 100 years of research on one nutrient at a time. There are studies trying the treatment of manganese. There are studies trying the treatment of B12, studies of calcium, studies of magnesium, studies of vitamin C, you name it. From 1920 was when we were able to access the scientific literature, back to the 20s up to the year 2000. So that's 80 to 90 years of research. There are tons of studies on one nutrient at a time. Now, the scientific method tells us we can only vary one variable at a time in order to interpret our data. But nobody told human physiology that. And our human physiology cannot be studied one nutrient at a time because of the need for balance. When we looked at that literature going up to about the year 2000, we found only one study that in the really traditional medical scientific literature that had ever tried a complex of nutrients. Since the year 2000, there's quite a lot of research on complex formulas. Most of it's in physical health, studying the resistance to flus and colds, but in the area of mental health, the field is growing. The formula that I study is the most studied and most published formula anywhere in the world. For either physical or mental health. And it's a balanced formula of vitamins and minerals. There are zillions of formulas out there, but most companies don't want scientific research on their formula. The group that I work with is a nonprofit group. I'm not affiliated with them commercially, so I don't know if I should mention them on...
I'm happy for you to. It's up to you.
Is that... All right, so let me just explain this. Their group, they call themselves True Hope, True Hope Nutritional Support Limited. They're a nonprofit group that started in Alberta. That's how I became aware of them. And they put out a formula with 36 ingredients. It has all the vitamins except K, and it has a very long list of dietary minerals. It's not the be-all and end-all. It is, you know, there are lots of formulas out there, and I'm sure some of the people listening to me right now are thinking that they're being helped by a multivite or something that they're taking. More power to you. What's different about True Hope is that they never really wanted to be a commercial enterprise. They wanted to foster scientific research. So there are, and by the way, none of us are affiliated commercially with them because we don't want to follow the big pharma model. But there are academic scientific researchers in Canada, the U.S., and New Zealand who are all doing studies of the True Hope formula and publishing it, publishing our data in peer-reviewed scientific journals.
I have a question here, if
yeah,
I may.
Please.
I'm looking at their website right now, and one I get off where I get focused on a certain thing for a while and start studying it. Yeah. And one of the things that I'm kind of looking into right now is particle size.
Oh,
when
yeah.
When you are developing these products, or whoever does develop these products, are they taking, what size are these particles? Will they cross the cell membrane?
Oh, you know, this is such an important question. I need to preface my answer by saying that I have nothing to do with this. I have nothing to do not only with their website, I have nothing to do with their formula, and I have nothing to do with the formulation of their formula. But I do know that when I first started studying it, our first publication was 2001. And when I first started studying it, Eva, if you opened a capsule, the particles were like grains of sand, big clumpy
mm-hmm.
things. And we used to get lots of people had nausea, even occasionally vomiting, even if you made sure that they took it with food. I mean, you should never take any of these nutrients on an empty stomach, but it was a real problem. And then a few years back, and boy, I'm not sure what year it was anymore, maybe about 5 years ago, I'm guessing, they switched manufacturers to one that could pulverize the minerals. I understand you cannot pulverize vitamins because you destroy the coat that and it damages the vitamins, but you can pulverize the minerals, and they have really the largest amount of dietary minerals, I think, of any formula out there. And so the particle size went way down. I know that the largest particle now is about 14 or 15 microns, and it also enabled them to decrease the number of capsules because you could pack it in better. And the big thing, nausea has almost completely disappeared. It's very unusual now in my research for someone to say that they felt nauseous even though they had taken it on a full stomach. So there must be something about it that is absorbed better. But beyond that, I can't tell you the way you worded that question, kind of like, are we sure it gets through any kind of, you know, blood-brain barrier or the gut mucosa or something? I can't prove that, but it appears to be a lot more tolerable.
Okay.
So that's a very important point. Thanks for raising it, even though it's not my expertise.
Well, my friend, I don't know if you know Mark Navu, but do you know him?
No, I don't.
He does, I guess, probably what you do, something similar. But he came down to visit me, and he said, let's go through your vitamins, Eva. Let me just show you what I'm talking about, because he's working on some Angstrom vitamins and minerals that's in a spray.
So we okay.
And I think that I get good stuff. I try to. But
mm-hmm.
we took out a lot of my stuff and opened up capsule by capsule and put it in water. And inevitably, there would be these big clumps of particles, you know, in
yeah.
the bottom of the bowl. And he said, if they can't dissolve in the water in the bowl, how can they dissolve in the water in your body and go through the cell wall?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the use?
Yeah.
So I learned something there.
I don't know if that's a valid test or not. I certainly have heard of people trying to dissolve their nutrients in a solution which was the same acidity of the human stomach. But I don't even know if that's a valid test.
Sitting outside.
Yeah.
He said, this will give you an idea.
An idea.
What I'm trying to explain to you.
Yeah. You know, I actually contacted a company or two at one point. I didn't want to be a researcher studying only one formula because people keep thinking I work for the company, and I don't. I mean, it's by the way, it's easy to take the high road and not take even an honorarium when you have a good salary, and I'm a full professor, so that's very important to me to maintain that objective distance, as it is for the other researchers that are studying this. But I certainly thought that there were a couple of other companies out there that would welcome the opportunity to have a researcher study the effects on mental health of their formulas. And I got laughed at by one company. It's very odd to me, but they just want to sell. They just want to make money. I guess that's the American
Actually,
or Canadian way, you know.
I've started when I don't know if you know, I'm a medical intuitive, and so a lot of people call me for what it is that I do. And so I say, when you want to get supplements, this is what I do. I literally call the lab that makes the supplements and say, what size are your particles?
Hmm.
If they're proud of their product, they will let you know. and tell you. If they're not, they will pass you on to someone else or laugh at you or say, I have no idea. Even if they say they have no idea, they know. If it's a good one, they'll say, yes, I know what it is, and tell you.
Now, that's very interesting. You know, the other thing you should ask them is whether or not they've been reviewed and approved by the FDA or Health Canada, because that's the other thing about the True Hope formula. Has here in Canada, it's been reviewed extensively by Health Canada after a number of years of contentiousness, by the way, if anyone
I'm
ever
sure.
Googles it, they'll run into it. But they now have an approved natural product number. And in the U.S., it's been reviewed and approved by the FDA for what's called a research IND. And these things are, you know, they're like union cards. They can be rather important for opening doors, but they also are a testament to the fact that, you know how you hear occasionally of a study where someone went to a store and bought, I don't know, 12 different versions of vitamin B12 and analyzed them and only two of them had any vitamin B12. You know, I'm making that up, right? But the assays that are required for the review and approval by the federal governments have to demonstrate that what you say is in the formula is really in the formula and that it is stable for a minimum of 2 years under, oh, high heat, humidity, all these kinds of tests they have to run. So I am comfortable that I'm studying something that is legitimate in that regard, but I think it is sad that so many other people are manufacturing formulas and not fostering research. So may I tell you a little bit about the research in relationship to mood disorders? You know, there's never one study that is a definitive study in science. We have to look at the weight of the evidence. And we also have to look at replication across investigators. That's very important that everybody gets the same result. And also it's important to know whether, you know, things like difference between children and adults. So I'll just give you a quick run through of the, there are, I think, 16 publications now on Empower Plus. A couple of them are just letters or essays, so maybe 14 or 15 are peer-reviewed publications in medical journals, and there are others that are under review and other studies that are in progress. So there, it's quite, as I say, it's the most studied formula in the world for physical or mental health. And what we've shown is very, very consistent results with what I would call unstable mood. I don't care if you want to label it bipolar disorder or explosive rage in children, irritability in kids with autism, or just basically unstable mood, if I can use that kind of generic term. And what we find is, again, across all three sites in both in children and adults, everything from single cases up to database analyses of 358 adults with bipolar disorder and 120 children and adolescents with bipolar disorder, we find significant impact on stabilizing mood, and it lasts. Some of the studies, I was one of them, I waited for 4 years to make sure that the effect I was seeing wasn't just a transient effect before I published one of my papers. And the database analyses, we monitored, we took the data out for 6 months. Nobody thinks that a placebo effect or an expectancy effect can make explosive rage go away for as long as 6 months, maybe for a few weeks, but not for 6 months.
Right, so, right, I agree.
Yeah, so we've published all of that. We have some amazing case studies and what are called case control designs, but some of the case studies, for example, a young man from New Zealand with OCD, where there was a whole year of history on him being treated with cognitive behavior therapy, and then he went on the True Hope formula, which is usually called Empower Plus, and on the formula he got way better, but he was certain, absolutely certain, that it wasn't the pills. He said, it's okay, I've remembered how to do my CBT again. So they said, fine, stop the pills. And, of course, he went downhill. So we call that on-off control. Then they put him back on the capsules, and symptoms got way better again.
Now, which one of these things, when you say the pills are kept, which one of these, I'm looking at your site, which one is it that you give somebody that's bipolar?
All of the research so far, I'm sorry, I should have addressed this. True Hope has moved into selling some other auxiliary products that they also are using with people, things like amino acids that are helping people go through withdrawal, things like that. But all of the scientific research has been on only one formula, and that is, between the countries, it's variously called Empower Plus or EMP or True Hope EMP. Do you see it there?
Okay. Capsules, powder, and tablet. So which one did you use?
All of the research uses capsules, as far as I recall. The tablets are, I don't have any experience with them at all. In one study I'm doing right now, we've just run into a child that we couldn't get her to swallow pills. And so we're using the powder.
Tell someone to take a day?
Well, that's an interesting point. We have a lot of people who just think that it's appalling to take more than one pill a day. These are people who are brought up in the pharmaceutical world, maybe two a day. So when I tell you that a very typical therapeutic dose for an adult is 5 capsules 3 times a day, in other words, 15 a day,
uh-huh.
It will sound shocking to some of your audience. So let me hasten to add why this is. Vitamins are a small molecule. If this were mainly a multivite, you wouldn't have to take 15 a day. But it's the dietary minerals, that the broad spectrum dietary minerals in there, that add a lot of bulk. And I always say, given where I live, I say, look at the Rocky Mountains. You know, minerals are bulky. But your listeners can just think about calcium tablets and multiply it by all the different minerals at the doses that are in there. And you'll understand why it's 15 a day. That's a therapeutic dose, Eve. I need to just explain this. That's a therapeutic dose for someone who's really in an acute phase of a disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But there are lots of people who get along okay on half of that, or maybe two-thirds of that. Sorry, you go ahead now.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at your ingredients, and you use forms that are highly absorbable.
Yeah,
it's
not my ingredients, but True Hope.
Opposed to zinc oxide and magnesium chelate as opposed to magnesium oxide. So it looks like a very good product.
Well, there are people who know an awful lot more biochemistry than I do who put this together and who deal with the formulation. I can't really comment, but our data are really pretty exciting. Now, we don't have a placebo-controlled trial yet, I need to hasten to add, but there's one in progress. And we do have these other controls like length of time and within subject on-off control, et cetera. So the weight of the evidence is very promising for mood stability. It's a little less clear on things like anxiety or ADHD, although the New Zealand data, again, I'll point to that, is looking very promising for some of the adult ADHD.
Could somebody take this if they were already on an antidepressant, say Paxil? Could they still take this with the Paxil, and then hopefully things would get better and they would notice it and be able to get weaned off the Paxil maybe?
Well, you've come close to describing the way that people do it. Now, because I'm a researcher, not a clinician, I can only tell you what the psychiatrists who I talk to, who use it a great deal, what they say and what the True Hope people do also.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, they follow a transition protocol where they start a very small amount of Empower Plus, and they gradually build up, and at a certain point, depending on what the drug is, they gradually start decreasing the drug. And they do that through their support line. They're the only company on earth that I know of that when you buy their product, if you need to transition off medication, they counsel you over the phone
how to do that. I forgot to do this, too, at the beginning of the show, that we're not doctors, we're not diagnosing, and we're not treating either one of us.
We're simply
providing information.
That's just information.
Right. It's up to the listener to go and do your homework. We're just giving information to you. I forgot to do that at the beginning.
Yeah. Sorry,
back to your story. I was just going to say, back to your story.
Just lost my train of thought on that one. Why don't you go ahead? I'll pick up again.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know it was about medication, Eva, and it's an important point. I'm not a physician. I'm a PhD researcher. But I do follow the literature on this issue of why you cannot mix a full therapeutic dose of a medication with a full therapeutic dose of an absorbable broad-spectrum micronutrient formula. And it makes perfect sense. And there's now a really excellent article out of Australia showing, you know, people look at it a little different way. They don't usually look at it as, oh, if you're going to go on a broad-spectrum formula, you need to decrease your meds. They look at it as, gee, if you're working with a really well-nourished population, you can probably use a lower dose of drug. It's a good news story for people in general. Sometimes when I talk to, say, orthomolecular groups, one of the things that I say is, if the micronutrient formulas you are using are not causing problems with the previous doses of psychiatric drugs your patients are on, there's something wrong with your micronutrient formula. Because everything we know about the logical, most likely mechanisms for why these formulas are improving brain function tells us that if they're working, if they're really being absorbed and really influencing brain function, then what used to be an appropriate dose of a medication will become an overdose. It would be like me taking Paxil. Uh-huh. I fortunately don't need to take it. It's just so logical.
I can't even comment. It's just so logical to me. It doesn't make any sense to be any other way. Okay, you know I have some specific questions that you didn't really want to talk about, but you said you would comment on them. Is that the time now?
Sure. Just for your audience. It's not that I didn't want to talk about them. It's just that some of them seemed like they were for an orthomolecular physician. So I'll have limited comments, but go ahead. Ask anything.
I wanted to bring up calcium because everybody's talking about magnesium and calcium today for many reasons, and none of them are moods. They're all talking about bone loss or heart disease or this or that. And one of the things I personally found out in my own life is that I needed calcium and zinc or I got depressed.
Ah, really?
Hmm. Yeah. And so I wanted... When I saw that in this paper that you sent me, I wanted to bring it up. Calcium is an important, the minerals are important for moods, not just for your bones and your teeth and your heart.
Absolutely.
So just whatever you had to say about that.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, one of the most interesting studies I ever read, and I'm not going to be able to, I can't recall who it's by right now, but anyway, it was a study of bone mineral density in a group of women. And what it found was that the women who had a history of depression had much lower bone minerals, bone mineral density. I thought, isn't that interesting? Because we know, it's so well known from the animal literature, too, that if an animal doesn't have adequate calcium, say maybe their parathyroid glands are not working well, or maybe you make the parathyroid glands not work well, you know that you end up with anxiety and depression, and in humans it's been shown to affect cognitive function. So if these things cause a calcium imbalance and it's associated with anxiety and depression and cognitive dysfunction, then it's perfectly logical that to conclude that calcium is very important for mood. It's just that, I don't know, people don't make that extra leap, but it's so reasonable. So it's interesting to me that you experience benefit. There's a little bit of research showing that patients with major depression have lower calcium concentrations in their red blood cells, et cetera, but there's not a huge amount of work.
Okay, the other question was about methylation, and most people won't even know what that is, and that's one reason I wanted to bring it up, because people never heard of it. I know barely a little bit, just enough to ask the question about it. Why is that important?
Well, remember, and I'll say this to your audience, I am not a biochemist or a neurobiologist, but I have had to learn a bit about how neurotransmitters, which are the chemicals that enable our brain cells to talk to each other, how neurotransmitters are created or synthesized and how they function in the brain. And it is known that adding a particular group of of molecules called a methyl group is extremely important in literally hundreds of reactions in our brain. These methylation reactions turn genes on, turn them off, activate enzymes, which are very important for synthesis of neurotransmitters. Excuse me. Sorry.
Bless you. We have that here in the South, too.
What, sneezing?
You know, allergies right now are horrible. Oh. I'm all stuffed up. I can't hardly...
Oh, okay. So we know that methylation is really an important part of all of these processes. A methyl group, literally, for any of your listeners interested in it, is carbon and three atoms of hydrogen, so CH3. So the transfer of a methyl group is important in the synthesis of neurotransmitters, for example. And many of your listeners will have heard of SAMe, right?
Uh-huh.
SAMe is a primary methyl donor. So when you take SAMe, you're making more methyl groups available throughout your brain and body, and those methyl groups can travel all over and affect things like the synthesis of neurotransmitters or some step in a metabolic pathway, etc.
Okay.
And by the way, we know that there are some of the B vitamins, which, like especially B12 and folate, that if you don't have an optimal amount of B12 and folate, you interrupt the methylation pathways. So that's how SAMe might be important. But so, like, I don't want anybody in the audience to think I'm saying this is a magic ingredient, because there is no one, well, there's no magic out there at all, Eva, but there's no single silver bullet either. So you've got the interrelationship, in this case, between some of the B vitamins and methyl donors like SAMe.
We've only got about 4 or 5 minutes, but I want to comment on that folate thing. I was interviewing another doctor a while back, and he said to me, his name is Zoltan Rona. He was supposed to talk about vitamin D, but we got all over the board. He said, if you have that human papillomavirus, mm-hmm. the thing that you do to fix it or control it is folate. Which I found very interesting.
Well, it's very interesting, but I have to tell you that where I am in my research is I am suspicious of anyone who says that to fix something, you need a single nutrient. Because I feel like we're back in that literature I was telling
you're
you about
right.
prior to the
probably
year 2000. Right. What else does folate need to be properly absorbed?
I totally agree. But the thing that makes me think of, to even bring that up, is when you look at this paper you sent me, it seems like folate was important to so many things.
Oh, it is.
But nobody ever hears anything about that.
Oh,
ever.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. It is one of the more important. I don't mean to disagree with you. It certainly is one of the more important ones.
Anyway, you've got 3 or 4 minutes to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Tell about your website or the conference. Or do you participate in the Alliance for Addiction Solutions?
You know, I don't. I haven't been involved in addictions at all, but I know they are somehow involved in the conference coming up in New York City. I think a number of representatives are coming. There's certainly a lot of people with very similar interests.
Talk about whatever you want in this last 2, 3, 4 minutes.
Oh, well, I think I've been talking about what I want for 60 minutes. So I'll conclude by saying this. Please, to any of your listeners, don't contact me for any clinical help. I'm not the one to contact. And I'm also, because I'm not affiliated with True Hope, don't contact me for that. But do look at their website. It's not my website. It's a little excited at times. There are all kinds of testimonials. Some of them are people I know, and they're quite legitimate experiences that are on there and on YouTube. But contact True Hope if you have questions about that one. And encourage any other company. If anyone in the audience thinks that they're doing well mentally because of a complex formula, contact that company and say, are you fostering scientific research to try to change the world? Because that's what they should be doing. That's my pie-in-the-sky attitude for the future.
Well, it looks like on this site, if you are interested, that they have a link if you for doctors to help treat you with this program. So if you're interested in what Dr. Kaplan's talking about, go to True Hope, and they have a list, a place where you can click to call them, and they will help you find a doctor if you need one, it looks like, as well as all their research, which is a good deal of Bonnie's research, too, from
okay.
what I see.
Well, everything that is published becomes public domain, so they can anybody can put it on their website. So you can catch up on the scientific research on their website.
Thank you, Dr. Kaplan, for taking the time to come on my show. Thank you for doing the work that you do. It's very important. It's saved my daughter's life. Not necessarily your particular work, but the work of Vitamins, Mineral, and Mood. It saved my daughter's life.
Oh,
really,
it's wonderful to hear.
So thank you for doing what you do and having the nerve to do it in the face of allopathic medicine.
Okay. Thank you so much for letting me speak about this, Eva. Best
of
luck to you.
Take care and come back sometime.
Okay. Bye for now.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Just
tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.